I'd like to call this meeting to order. Thank you all for coming.
And thank the members for coming. This is as good a crowd as we've had in a long time. We have a lot of important issues to go on tonight.
And thank you all in the audience for coming. You'll certainly, if you want to speak, just raise your hand. We'll give you a chance to speak. And I'll turn this over to Andrew, and we can start.
All right. Thanks again there. If we could, just since we got an audience here and a new member here of SMAC, if we could do one more quick round of introductions so people listening on the call know who's here and the folks in the audience do. I'm Andrew Button from Virginia Marine Resources. I'm the head of the Oyster Conservation Replenishment Department.
Kevin Wade, Deltaville.
Don Porter,
Sykes.
Ernie George, commercial fisherman.
Cody Metcalf, Chincoteague.
J.C. Hudgens, commercial fisherman. Matthews.
Wayne France, Northern Neck.
Lake Coward, Lodgeburg.
John D. Maria, Newport News.
Richard Harden, Reedville.
Tommy Kellum, Weems.
And I think Jackie Shannon, you're on the phone there. Might be on mute there on the phone. Mm-hmm.
Hey there. Yeah, this is Jackie Shannon, Chesapeake Bay Foundation. Sorry I couldn't make it. There's an issue with the Monitor Merrimack Bridge tunnel.
Before we get into the main agenda items, I just wanted to give a quick rundown on some of the freshet-related mortality that we've seen in a few areas this year, and open it up to comments from folks here if they have anything else to add to that. Then we can jump into the agenda if that works with.
That's fine.
We started getting some anecdotal reports a few weeks ago, more than a few weeks ago, about a month ago now, and some of the about freshwater mortality in a number of different areas. And we got out starting about 3 or 4 weeks ago and started checking some of the areas. And this is the upper Rappahannock. And what we saw in the upper Rappahannock, just to orient yourself, this is Tappahannock up here. Moratico down here, so this is going to be Area 8 right here. This is Area 9, the Hantong area, and this area is usually closed to harvest for pollution up there, but there are oysters up there. And what we saw in the upper areas was almost 50% to up to 100% loss in some of these furthest upriver areas. And as we worked our way down further in some of the Hantong areas, we're seeing 10 to 50% loss. In these areas, the good news is that in the where the hand scrape line is there, we were only seeing basically normal loss. So Moratico looked fairly good, and the areas further down, we weren't seeing a significant level of loss there. But there was, near total loss and pretty high loss in these areas further upriver. In the James River, these lines are not exact. Right across, but sort of close to 50 to 90% in the upper deep water shoals area. Started seeing less loss down towards Horsehead, and then sort of in the lower areas, the loss wasn't as sort of normal loss that we're seeing there. Nothing too drastic. There might be some pockets here and there further down where we're seeing heavier loss, but the areas that we checked in these upper areas wasn't seeing anything too drastic. But there was some substantial loss in the upper deep water shoals replenishment areas, sort of down to Horsehead there. So there might be some other pockets around Mulberry where freshets came down, where there might be some isolated pockets of heavier loss than that. But overall, the lower areas, not drastic. Upper areas, a fair amount of loss up there. We did get out last week and check some of the Potomac tribs and the Potomac main stem off of out on those Hantong areas over there. The Nominae looked okay, and the areas in the Potomac main stem off Colonial Beach that we checked, there wasn't substantial amounts of loss there, which is good news. The salinities in some of these upper areas are still, hovering around that 2 to 3, where if it gets warm, you might still see some loss, but there wasn't a whole lot going on in those areas. So not a complete washout, so to speak, but it's something that we haven't experienced in a number of years that we're seeing this year. So that's what VMRC has to report, and if there's any other questions for me, I'd be glad to try to address those, or if there's any comments from what folks have been seeing in their areas to add to the discussion.
Any comments from the members? Or any questions from the audience on anything Mr. Button said? If not, we can proceed, I guess.
Okay. So that brings us to our first agenda item, which is the James River Seed Area. So we talked about this in a fair amount of detail, so I won't spend too much time on it, but this is just the last 3 years, the annual, so this is January to December of the same year, seed harvest. And you can see that in 2017 we had a pretty substantial jump just in the year. I mean, over 120,000 bushels just in one of the areas alone, combined with, this is the Days Point area here, close to 140,000 bushels came out of the James in just a calendar year. That's not a season year. So the 2018 numbers, this is just for mandatory reporting, so they're not completely up to date yet. But you can see, even without that update in the numbers, they're still substantially higher than 2016. This is just sort of to fill in what we talked about last time, that really the takeaway number is in this 2017-2018 season, this is our best, most accurate estimate of what was actually harvested there in the 2017-2018 season. So 111,000 bushels. We did close the seed harvest about a month early. I think that was probably a prudent decision to not go over the quota. I mean, 3,000 to 4,000 bushels can come out of there a day if people are really really moving. So that quota would have been probably caught and exceeded pretty quickly if we had stayed open for the month of May there. So just to orient everyone, this line right here is the hand-scraped Hancock line. So this whole area up here is the James River Seed Area and James River Clean Cull Area. This is the area that we're talking about. These are the hand scrape areas further down. This is sort of a further breakdown of, this is Burwell Bays region here. This is Point of Shoals, Mulberry Island in here. And we've discussed a number of options in the last meeting that we could do without any code changes. So all these options are still things that we could do if we choose to as a commission in terms of managing this resource up there. There was an ask made to look into other options in terms of what we could legally do concerning oysters going out of the state. So we're somewhat limited in that. We can't just say, no, you can't take them out for some reasons, and we can't have a separate quota system. We can still all do these. But we are allowed to, we can't propose a regulatory change. So this is what is a proposed regulatory change at the upcoming commission meeting. So as a conservation measure, we can limit the issuance of seed permits. So we can't just say you can't take out of state, but we don't have to issue an out-of-state permit if it's going to have an impact to the resource. So this is a proposed regulatory change that we'll be making to at the upcoming commission meeting, that the Commission of Marine Resources granting permits required by Code Section 282546 of the Code of Virginia when he determines that the seed area is currently open to harvest or becoming depleted, and the additional granting of such permits could seriously injure the seed areas. So that allows us to not issue out-of-state permits. It wouldn't really affect the quota directly, but if it looked like there was large amounts of seed and we weren't going to be able to manage it through the quota system, and it was going to have an impact to the resource for any number of reasons, we could issue fewer permits or stop issuing permits or only issuing them when the commissioner deemed that it was prudent to do so for the management of the seed resource. So that would give us a tool to work with there.
Andrew,
yeah.
I just asked, and I answer, but at this point, we used to have a bushel tax based on the price. We don't have a bushel tax anymore, and this product goes out of state, and there's no guarantee that it may come back to Virginia in any way. It doesn't benefit Virginia watermen when it goes out of state.
That's correct.
Unless it goes perhaps to Potomac River, where we have fishing rights. But even if it goes out of state, there's no, Virginia doesn't reap anything other than, I guess, the watermen that catch it would reap something when they catch it.
Well, any additional tax like that, I mean, there are some things that could address this issue that would require code changes, but at the commission level, those are sort of the options, and this is something that we can do this regulatory change. But any kind of tax, additional fee, like the user fees for seed areas or anything like that, that would have to most likely be a code change.
But there's no repletion money that can be used to, I mean, there's no repletion money generated from out-of-state sales to replete the resource once it leaves Virginia.
That's correct. Other than just the user fees paid by the harvesters and the oyster buyers who are transporting that out.
To do something about that, would that also take a code change probably?
My understanding is that would take a code change.
Because I remind the members of the panel, when Dr. Mann, I think, was discussing with us last meeting how much difference it is, you know, Virginia making $1 million on seed, when if we kept it in state, it could be up to $7 million. It's a big difference.
And just so we're kind of aware of the amount that sort of stays in the state, sort of historically, I mean, I say that not looking way back, but since the industry's come back and the seed harvest has picked up again there, sort of the in-state demand has been on that 60 to probably maximum 80,000 bushels a year is sort of the in-state demand, and the out-of-state demand has been in that, almost that identical, depending on the year, just in this last season. So one of the additional proposed changes this year would be to actually, in part, due to that freshwater loss that we experienced in that area, as sort of a conservation measure, to go ahead and drop the seed quota to 100,000 bushels. I propose that at the staff level for the James River area. In addition to this change here, that would help manage that for conservation within the state of Virginia, and that 100,000 bushels should more than meet the Virginia demand. And then there's that added conservation measure that, even if Virginia demand does increase, we're not getting into a level, particularly due to the freshwater loss, where it could damage the seed areas.
That's 100,000 from what?
It was 120,000 bushels per year. So the same change that we made last year, where there's a 40,000 bushel quota from October through December, we would maintain that. And if that quota was reached before January 1st, we could shut down the seed fishery and then open it up again January 1st. And the same thing, that if that seed quota wasn't caught in the fall of this year, then that would roll over into the spring.
How much seed went out of state this past season?
I don't have a exact number on that tallied up, but I know the demand was in the 40 to 80,000 bushel range. We're switching over to an automated seed out-of-state seed permit this year, so we'll be able to keep a better tally on that. But with the mandatory reporting and the call-in, the sort of numbers that I have don't really even come close to matching sort of anecdotally what I've heard from the state of Maryland in terms of what they actually bought. So I don't have a solid number to give you on that.
The lower seed area this year probably will get a whole lot more pressure than the upper with some freshwater damage, would you say?
I would imagine another reason, instead of trying to use those other options to chop up various areas, that if we lower the overall bushel limit, that'll help alleviate that additional impact to those lower areas. So those are really the proposed changes on that, and if we want to open that up to discussion or
yes, please.
Conversation on that.
Any discussion on that?
Does that regulatory change, if a seed permit is issued for out of state, and you find that conservation is for conservation reasons, does it allow the commissioner to pull that permit, or is it only stop it from being issued?
Well, this is I probably should have put this up there before we got into that. The seed permits are issued by the load daily.
So
I think once you issued one, it wouldn't be retroactively. But this is actually the code section that establishes the permit there. And it did used to specifically grant the commission permission to stop issuing these permits, similar to the language that we saw there. But it was just lost during the recodification process in 1992. There wasn't actually an official amendment to make that change. So we still have more or less authority to do that by code.
That criteria that was that you had for people would be able to get seed or seed from the Yankee Tank or something like that, but they had to put a certain amount of shell there. Is that criteria can that be applicable to out of state?
No, that's for in state only.
But why are you able to do that in state but you can't do it out of state?
There's a number of regulations about oyster harvest from out of state individuals, so no out of state individual is allowed to purchase an oyster gear license. And in order to participate in the seed transfer program, you have to have the gear licenses to do so. So since we can't issue licenses to Marylanders, they can't harvest from public grounds in the state of Virginia. So, I mean, I guess if someone in Virginia wanted to participate in that seed transfer program, plant the shells, once they've harvested those oysters, that's different than the public grounds. And that would be, I guess, really the way that if Maryland wanted to get into buying it indirectly, maybe they could. But
yeah, it just seems like to me that's I don't know how that program works because I've never participated in it, but I think they ought to have the same constraints.
we usually have individuals sign up by lot.
I'm talking about out of state.
Oh, out of state, yeah.
Or somehow or another be able to have that on them, and that might give some reward because you're not getting any tax money.
Well, I think that might be something to look into, definitely, but I don't think I don't know if we'd be able to come up with a plan and a change for making that happen this season.
It doesn't have to happen tomorrow. It can happen next year or the following year, if it's plausible. I mean, we're to get nothing every year for decades. Why do we want to continue making the same mistake that we've been making for decades into the future? I mean, he's talking about the taxes. I'm just talking about they need to give something. They need to get something for the oysters, other than just the harvest money.
Let's go.
How is Potomac River looked at since we have fishing rights in Potomac River? Is that looked at as out of state or is it looked at as a transfer in state? Obviously, it's a public resource once they buy it and plant it, but it can be harvested by Virginian.
Well, that's sort of all those separate Potomac fisheries. They're sort of there's a whole separate Potomac River compact that establishes the fishing rights jointly between Maryland and Virginia. So there isn't really a model like that for any other system set up.
I mean, are they considered out of state? I guess that's my question. Is Potomac River considered a sale out of state?
I'm not sure exactly what you're asking there. If someone's to sell it to the Potomac River, would that be considered an out-of-state permit? If it was planted on, I would have to look at we have usually issued out-of-state permits for the transfer to the Potomac River fisheries, I believe, because it is going not in state waters. So I think the commission would have discretion there on whether or not to issue those permits for the Potomac River fisheries.
I could have asked Dr. Weston maybe to weigh in on that, because things maybe right now are getting ready to change with Maryland in the bottom on the Potomac River.
The Potomac is treated exactly the same as any other place. I mean, if the quota is gone and they can't get additional quota for the Potomac, they just fall into the same quota with everybody else. And it's normally carried by a private individual.
Andrew, how do you know when you're taking up seed and you say you're going to take up 120,000 bushels, how do you know when an area is starting to get depleted until you harvest all of your quota? Do you go in and do a survey then? Or I'm just thinking of the commissioner. You said he can make some changes if we look like that we are depleting an area, such as you talked about Day's Point, at the last meeting. I was wondering how we would determine when an area was becoming depleted.
Well, we have a pretty good idea going into the based on last year's cat and tongue survey of what's there.
Mm-hmm.
So if it looks like there are certain areas that are you know, being targeted heavily there, then we could make that decision if we're seeing they're required to call in areas every day that they're catching from.
Okay.
So if it looks like there's a influx for out-of-state permits on a particular area, we would know that area is getting completed and could stop issuing those permits.
Do you work a different area every year?
No, the whole area is
open. Whole area is open? Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of different ways you could look at that and sort of define whether it's having an impact. And, I mean, as soon as you start harvesting, an area is technically getting depleted.
At what point do you think when the fisherman starts working over there, the amount he catches becomes so small that he decides he doesn't want to work there any longer because he can't make a day's work?
I think that would depend on the fisherman.
So you don't have like a general idea, like if you took 50 guys and figured what the average would be with 50?
You're talking about seed
harvest? So, I mean, to answer with his question, how do you know? Because when it gets down to a certain level, the boats typically move. I mean, I know I didn't want to work on a place where I couldn't catch enough oysters to make a day's work. So I'm just asking you what BMRC thinks. Like, if you know, you're sitting over there working 4 or 5 hours and you're only going to catch 2 bushels, is that sufficient?
I mean,
very
individual specific. I mean,
I understand that, but that's not. I'm not asking for the person that would catch the smallest amount. I'm asking for an average of 50 people.
I don't have a good number on that.
So you don't have no idea?
I guess that would be just from monitoring as the season proceeds.
Right.
That would be one answer to his question, because people aren't going to sit there and keep, you know, you put a gill net out and you don't catch no fish, you don't keep on doing the same thing over and over and over again because you can't make a day's work.
Well, most of the people reporting seed harvest anyway are catching in that 100 to 150 bushel.
Well, I was talking about clean calls because he's talking about over at Dave's Point. So if you're going to close that place down, is it when it gets to when the guys get to where they can't catch but so much, they're going to stop?
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I don't think we're talking about closing any specific areas down. It would just be at this point keeping the areas open or stopping the issue of out-of-state permits to take some of that additional pressure off.
Oh, okay.
Okay, because maybe good. I misunderstood, but I thought Dave's Point, we were talking about maybe making it a clean call bar.
We had discussed that a little bit, but I think with these other management measures in terms of dropping the bushel quota and allowing the ceasing of issuing out-of-state permits, if it does look like generally the areas are getting depleted, I mean, any one of those areas, if it starts getting depleted, that could be a reason for stopping.
We're back to the same thing, the depletion now. See, when you say that's what I'm getting at.
How do we do?
You know, a lot of depletion, you can tell what depletion is because people go over and work and they can't catch nothing.
Right.
But if they go out there and just catch one bushel all day long, that's staying close to being nothing as you could be because you couldn't pay for the fuel. So 2 or 3 or 4, that's what I'm saying. And you get an idea. I mean, because if you're going to have an 8-bushel limit or 6-bushel limit or 12-bushel limit or whatever, but if the guys can't catch but 2 or 3, I mean, that's showing.
Well, you know, most
people aren't going to stay someplace.
They're going to go
somewhere else. How few oysters will you work on before you decide you want to go somewhere else?
That depends on what somewhere else is, and what's there, and what the price is.
Well, I mean, I think we can look at numbers coming in, and if it starts out that people are clean colored and they're catching 12 bushel limits and they're back at the top by one, that's great. But if all of a sudden you can see that come down over the course of the season, that would be a measure.
Come down to what?
I don't have the exact.
Man, you just said. Come on, man, tell me.
Yeah. No, I mean.
You can tell me. I'm not going to hold you to it.
And that would be a decision that I would make personally. It would be it would come probably to the commission for a closure there, or go to the commissioner to.
You're really into politics.
I don't honestly. That's a hard question to answer. You can start the season out catching your limit quick, and if there's enough boats there,
that's the way it always is.
It has to be. This is going to have to be done, in my opinion, just by some kind of either looking at reports coming in or some kind of monitoring. Beg your pardon?
We're talking about clean calls.
Y'all were talking about clean calls.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah, we're getting back. At the last meeting, we discussed Dave's point as maybe being a.
See that this. Yeah, I promise you, we know what we're talking about.
Okay. Well, I think the distinction is that you can use if the clean toll, if that limit is coming down because they're working the same areas, that could be a sign that the area is getting depleted because that number is dropping off.
Yeah.
So that is one of the ways that we could make that determination in terms of not issuing out of state permits.
Right.
So your position on rough calling it, eliminating rough calling at point at Ace Point is not on the table any longer.
I think with this as well as dropping the overall quota to 100,000 bushels, I think that
a yes or no question.
Yeah. What's that?
That's a yes or no.
That is I would not propose changing Ace Point to clean coal only.
Okay. Okay. Good. Good.
Mr.
Chairman, I'd like to hear something straight up again.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Going forward with this, going back to the Potomac tributaries, I would like some emphasis put that any time it's going for the benefit of Virginia Waterman, which would be the case in the Potomac, that we do put priority there. My intention is out of state, but my feeling is if it's still going to benefit Virginia Waterman, we need to take that into consideration.
I kind of agree because
being able to legally do it, so.
Particularly in an area that you're extremely reliant on seed, and you're not getting those strikes in the upper part of the Potomac, and you may need that resource. I think we need to keep that on our priority list.
Can that be done?
Well, the way that the regulation changes, this is the out of state permit, so we wouldn't. So we still have the 100,000 bushel quota, and the only thing that we could cut off would be out-of-state transport. Any in-state transport, we'd still be managing through the quota system.
Can you make the out-of-state at the end of the year or something instead of the beginning of the year?
Well, if it looks like we haven't met that quota and it doesn't look like there's demand and the resource is still looking good towards the end of the season, then we would be free to, the commissioner would be free to start reissuing out-of-state seed permit.
So Virginia could get first shot.
That's
what you just said.
In effect, that is a possibility, but that wouldn't be the sole purpose of this regulation. It would be mainly for conservation of the resource.
That's what he was saying.
That would be a side effect of that, though.
Yeah, I think, Mr. Kellum, what you're kind of saying is since Virginia Waterman do have the right and can work in the Potomac River, which is out of state considered.
My opinion is that any time there's a benefit to Virginia Waterman for it, I'm in favor of it getting in that direction before it goes out of state to the upper part of Maryland where no Virginia Waterman's going to get an opportunity.
What about an interstate buyer? Would they come first before an out-of-state buyer?
If the commission decided not to issue out-of-state permits, they could still issue in-state permits. So the whole season, in-state transfer out of the James River permits would still be issued up to the 100,000 bushel quota.
He's just got to have the backup that he's doing it for conservation. It can't be that we're just doing it. Mm-hmm. My interpretation of that regulation would be we can't say we're just not going to let an out-of-state buyer buy it. It's got to be that we're not issuing this permit because of conservation reasons, and we're going to keep in state. Is that?
That's a lawsuit.
Yes.
The review is when they have an out-of-state license. Is there a quota limit on each license, or a quota bushel on each license? Am I correct?
These are just individual handwritten permits right now. For
no bushels amounts or anything.
There are bushel amounts on the permit. This is sort of the description right there. It shall state the name of the boat, the license number of the motor vehicle, the name and address of the owner or captain of the boat or owner or operator of the motor vehicle, and the permit shall state the name and address, as well as the permit shall specify the number of bushels to be carried out of the Commonwealth.
Well, I know. You're talking about Mr. Kyle was talking about tackles. I know when we buy horses from Maryland, they charge an export tax. So they tax their product coming to Virginia. I know it's something we have to change in code, but we should get something for it.
I think that if there was a code change, I mean, we had to make a code change for the relay permit, because that was in code. So if there was going to be a fee associated with this permit, that would probably have to be a code change too, and I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to that, but in terms of using that money for replenishment. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that the Virginia demand will meet that 100,000 bushel quota. So in May or April, if there's still a lot of this quota left and it doesn't look like there's going to be an impact to the resource, then there would be no reason for us not to issue out-of-state permits, and that would allow the harvesters to still sell out-of-state at that time.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Button. Is this something that you need a motion on tonight? To go before the commission next week or the week after next?
I would appreciate the what support from SMAC there is for this regulatory change, as well as the quota adjustment. I don't think we have to have a motion at this time, but if there wants to be one or there is one, I would take that to the commission there.
There are a lot of different angles to this thing being brought up every time we have a discussion, but can you simplify this for what you need right okay. now and go over it with us, and maybe we can come up with something?
So the proposed, what I would propose is a staff recommendation to Regulation 720 at the August Commission meeting would be to insert this language here that allows the commissioner to cease granting the permits required by 282-546 out-of-state seed permits and lower the overall James River seed quota to 100,000 bushels. Everything else in terms of James River seed would remain unchanged. So the 40,000 bushels in the fall, the remainder of the quota in the spring. So that would be the proposed regulatory change.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Andrew, how would you feel about, rather than just cutting it to 100,000, leave it at 120 with part of this, that it could be cut to 100 by the Commissioner of Conservation deemed it necessary?
Well, I think that I spoke with Roger Mann of VIMS about it in detail, and I think he addressed you guys last time. And even before this freshet was a known issue, and before the out-of-state, I still think his recommendation was that 100,000 bushels would be sort of, it gives you a little more room if something does go wrong. So I would still like to go ahead. I mean, it's hard after the fact to go back, so we can always go back up. I know everyone says once you take it, you never go back up, but I think if you see a good fat setting down, there isn't a freshet next year, that there wouldn't be any reason to go back up to it. But I think it would be prudent to go ahead and just in case lower that quota just by an amount that shouldn't affect Virginia demand as well.
Yes. So, Andrew, we'll do our in-state requests first and then, you know, say 100,000 bushels. So say we get 80,000 bushels in-state request. That leaves 20,000 bushels for out-of-state to Maryland. Is that the way the system is going to operate?
I would sort of foresee that if we got daily requests, you know, everything would be open up October 1st. And if it looked like there were a lot of buyers gearing up to buy for Maryland, transport to Maryland, and we were getting permit requests for, you know, 5,000 bushels of seed out of state right off the get-go, that we would probably stop issuing those out-of-state permits, or if it looked like that was going to be the case, not issue those permits, because there is always a little bit of lag in the quota system we don't want to go over, and that would be a conservation measure. So effectively, yes. Yeah.
But can you incorporate this conservation theory to stop the state, stop out of state from getting the stuff till Virginia gets what they want in using conservation or the issue of the depth as a basis
well,
in what we're asking for?
Well,
I mean, can we do that somehow or another?
I think that if it looks like there's a large demand immediately for oyster seeds that's going to exceed the quota, all we could do if this regulatory change was stop the out-of-seed transport, so in-state would still be allowed.
Well, no, in-state is fine.
Right.
Yep. Out-of-state is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that would stop.
So that could be in the motion because of the death rate that we've encountered in Virginia, that we need to see what's going to happen first before we can allow out-of-state to come in and buy. I mean, can we figure that in there somehow or another?
I think that...
I mean, I don't know how to do it, but I know you do.
I think that if this language is in there, that could be taken into account without having it...
Let's do it that way.
So, I mean, if SMAC's in support of this regulatory change...
Well, let's present it that way.
I would like to hear from Summit Waterman before we...
Yes, I was going to ask, please, if anybody in the audience wants to speak, please come forward. Please state your name so we...
I'm Jamie Jenkins. Nice to see y'all again. I'm a James River seed harvester, and I know a lot of people here aren't. First thing I picked up on was Mr. Button didn't know the quota that we caught last year for Virginia seed. I'd like to say I do agree that Virginia seed harvested should stay in Virginia. Get all you can get harvested here, planted here. I'm with you on that one. But for to cut us another 20,000 bushels, you're cutting a number that you don't know what you had last year. We get 8 months a year. May is just for James River harvesting, and you took it. My biggest month of the year, my biggest month, my family depends on it. You took it, and you started your meeting with, you don't know what the quota number was. You'd have to have some sort of idea because you took my months from me in April. So in April, you had an idea what the number is. This morning, there's no number. Let's take 20,000 more anyway. You guys see where I'm coming from. It's kind of a sensitive area. I go to work out here all year long when this state regular, all my regulations, my 3-inch oysters, and when they talk about Day's Point, you can't make a day at Day's Point because everything just missed a stick, and you lose your license. There's only 900 of us anyway. There's only 900 oystermen. You know, there's only 500 got boats. It's a big deal around home. You know, we don't got no crab pot license. There are more guys who grew up crabbing, and you're steadily taking and taking and taking. And I think it needs to be taken into consideration. If you want to know what the numbers are, look at the daily tags we got to fill out. You want to know how many rockfish you're catching, you give them a day. You know, I come up here every time and talk about the same thing. You know, it just makes no sense that you don't have the numbers to support what you want to do. You want to take something, why you want to take it? We caught too many last year, how many we catch? I know how many I caught, I had to write it down every day. Just like everybody else here in the oyster, the cedar, that's why they're here. I work all month long for... was my quota 8 bushels, 12 bushels? Let's just make the number 10. Get $50, $500. I got one other guy with me. It's $1,000. Okay, I take out my boat, my fuel, so on and so forth, what's left. Well, you can go seeding. I can jam them in there. Boat carry 300, $7 a bushel. Family made some money. You know, you're not hurting the seed. We're taking it for point of shoals anyway. And with the quota from last year that we went over when they took our money, nobody took into account that all the James River seed that was harvested and planted back into James River, it didn't go nowhere. They just took it and put it on their private ground. So, I mean, none of these things are being... You ask these questions, Mr. White, he don't know. You got to ask the guys around here every day doing it. You know, y'all are there because you've been there every day doing it. Mr. White can't tell you what you're doing or how to do it. It's up to us to tell him. I don't think you should take 20,000 bushels from him. He doesn't even know how many we had last year. So how you going to take 20,000 more? Not to get so excited and, you know, try to get my point across calmly. It's a big deal from $2,000 a month to $7,000 a month. I'm only given 8 months to work anyway. I'm only allowed 8 bushels a day. You give me 100 days to drudge. If I miss 20, I've lost 20% of my income. 20 days. How hard is it to miss 20 days? Weather, the ice we had last year. There's no compensation for that in my income. And here we come again. Nobody talking about that. What are you talking about? Take something else from us. Bring Mr. Keller. You got to keep the watermen and, you know, just as much as the conservation, the watermen has to be just as important. Because without the watermen, what you got? You got a job. And that's what you're trying to do to me. Put me out of a job. But the more you take from us, the less I have. What I got to go to work with, my drudges ain't no cheaper this year. My tong ain't no cheaper this year. You know, fuel's going up. But I'm on a regulatory, I'm on a fixed income that's allotted by what y'all vote on. And I believe a lot of guys here agree that you can't can't hurt the seed in the James River. And I can take you anywhere you want to go there and show you. I can take you where there's oysters this long in the tong area in 30 foot of water that you can't do nothing with them but go there, put a dredge in them, load the boat, and plant them somewhere else. Why not? You got them in a tong area where they can't be touched. He says, you're free to take them up. They're gone. Man, they're deep as a Burger King sign. Ain't no doubt about it. Been there my whole life. I'm 42 years old. I know what I'm telling you. A lot of these things have to be looked at. My main concern is I'm here to speak for the James River oystermen and what's best for us. I know who's tough for you. The wife, tough for you, the kids.
All right, thank you.
If y'all take into consideration that, tell as many as you can. If you think we're taking too many, cut it off. But you don't even have an argument that we took too many because you didn't give us the number of what we took last year when you cost me $8,000. Yeah. $8,000 is a lot of money to me. You know, a couple hundred bucks in my pocket. I'm no big waterman. I'm a starving waterman. But I go out there and I grind every day for it. And for this guy to have control over 20,000 bushels, 20,000 bushels might not seem like a lot, but I can count in the month of May by myself 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16, 8. There's 2,000 of them right there. There's 10% of the 20 bushels, the 2,000 bushels you want to take in this room at $7 a bushel. So I'd like y'all to take that into consideration, please.
All right, thank you. Somebody, anybody else want to speak?
And just so the record there, that was 111,000 bushels is what we show from last year. That was the quota.
Okay, well, you cut us off. You took May from us, and the quota was 120, so you stole 9,000 bushels from us. If we were allowed 120 last year, you took May from us, and we didn't get that 9,000. So you've gone to add them, which instead of taking 20,000 more, give us the 9,000 last year. They're still there.
All right, thank you.
Mr.
Chad.
On that there, is it just pertaining to that state?
Yes.
Okay.
Anybody else have anything to say? Yes, please come forward and state your name.
William Collins.
Yeah, state your name to the mic, please, for the record.
William Collins.
Thank you.
I would just say if there's a way that you could monitor if an area has been depleted or not, you know, if you could come up with a way to monitor that, you know, like the fellow was saying earlier about you can tell when a waterman isn't catching his quota and he moves to another section, if you could find a way to see if it's depleted or not, you know what I mean, that would make means for to say, okay, let's cut 20,000 bushel out of the limit or the quota, you know what I mean, for the year.
Or maybe close that area.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you wouldn't have to. The watermen, like he said, would move to another area automatically. You wouldn't stay there.
I think that's something worth considering, but we haven't figured out exactly how to do it yet.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. If there's a way to monitor if an area has been depleted or not, that was what I wanted to say.
Yeah, that's something that definitely needs to be done. Thank you. Anyone else? Mr. Barton.
Other questions, sir?
Any other questions, or does somebody?
Still thinking it's a good idea to take 20,000 when he just said that we didn't fill the quota last year and we lost one of our 8 months. Are we still thinking that? That's my question. Are we still in favor of taking
20,000? Well, I don't want to get back and forth, but we cut close to 140,000 bushels for the best data that we have in the calendar year. So that's over the quota. That was for the season there, is what we have right now. We don't have the most up-to-date harvest data for that yet.
Since April?
Yes.
We're still getting reports in on. Any more discussion?
Just help me understand this, because I've heard the confusion about the fact we didn't catch the total amount. You're still getting reports from what we caught last year that we, and your figures say 111. Possibly we caught more than 120 last year.
Well, usually there is sometimes up to a several month delay in what the. Some people don't call. They're required by regulation to call in their quota every month. and there is usually some misreporting, or people don't report and call it in every month. But in mandatory reporting, oftentimes they're reporting what they caught in mandatory reporting. That has a 3 or 4 month delay in terms of it's got to come into our office, get sent out, get tabulated up. So once that happens, usually that amount historically has been considerably higher than the call-in amount.
Well, with the public resource, though, how come mandatory reporting runs that far behind? Why aren't we requiring, I mean, I can understand on private grounds it's not as important as it is with the public resource. But with public resource, why aren't the numbers available very soon after the harvest?
Well, they're required to report monthly. That's required to report monthly, but the reports are processed, and then there's just some delay in getting all the reports from all the different fisheries all in.
Well, the buyer is supposed to report daily when they buy a James River seed?
The catcher is supposed to call into our automated system daily. Yeah.
The catcher is, but what about the buyer?
I don't believe so, no.
The buyer has 30 days or 60 days or...
Well, the buyer makes a report every month.
Right. The buyer reports monthly, the harvester, they submit their reports monthly, but they're required to report their catch daily in mandatory reporting. And they're also, just for the James River seed quota, supposed to use this call-in system. And where the delay is, if you look at these numbers right here, you can look that, and this is all that was called in the 2017-2018 season for the spring, or for the fall, was 36,000. And when we looked after mandatory reporting had updated, it was 47,000. So we exceeded our quota there. The same thing if you look back, this is what the call-in total was in 2016-17, and this is what mandatory reporting showed. So that number right there for that last year, that's the difference. And that's why after looking at the overage in the fall this last year and the call-ins that we've received so far, that we chose to close the season early because we had...
Well, obviously, Mr. Jenkins has been calling in every day. And some of the people that work this for a living on a regular basis have been calling every day. Isn't it required? I mean, does VMRC not tabulate these daily when they call in?
No, we do tabulate them daily when we call in, but not everyone has been calling in based on the mandatory reporting numbers that we do.
Well, then what can be done to protect Mr. Jenkins' livelihood and give accurate numbers? I mean, if these people are required to call every day and they don't call every day, why are they still in the fishery?
Well, there is a misdemeanor, so tickets if it does show up that they're not calling in and they are harvesting, that they can get a misdemeanor. And that would help if we do get better compliance. That would help with the system. We could track the quota more tightly, and that would help with quota management. So there, it is a violation of Regulation 720 to not call in your seed oyster harvest.
Jason.
Yeah, Andrew, I think what we need to do, we need to promote electronic harvest reporting more. We're doing it in the crab pot fishery. We've been doing it for 3 or 4 years. It's very easy to do, and it's simple. Anybody got a smartphone, within two or three minutes, once you initially set up for that month, it's very, very easy to do it, you know. And that's what, and then you got on-time information all the time.
I absolutely agree that having up-to-date information would make this much easier.
I've got something too, an issue that I've run into with this tabulation that's going on over here. And what I'm referring to is on a monthly basis, I would be buying seed and shells, and I'd be buying 20,000-30,000 bushels, and I would put on the harvest report that I harvested 20,000-30,000 bushels from Horsehead. And then I would put that I planted them over at Nell's Creek. Okay. Well, the people over there in the office, they don't want to have anything but what's harvested. They don't want to have anything that shows where it went. Okay. And so if they're doing it at the meet where I'm doing it on my private ground, they probably would be doing it to the same person if I went out there and harvested and bought seed from the guys in the James River and planted them on my bed. They just want to know what I bought. They wouldn't want to know that I planted them in the James River. And to me, that has a value. And I don't understand why it's being circumvented. I don't understand it.
It doesn't make any sense to me. It used to be they wanted to know where it came from and when it went. Now they could care less where it went. All they want to know is where it came from.
Mr. Buck, how long does it usually take in an annual year after, say, after May when the seed harvest is over before you get a final tally on the numbers card?
They get better the further you go out. So there's some people who didn't report at all, but sort of to have pretty decent numbers, probably about 3 months, and to have really good numbers with all the corrections, maybe a little bit longer than that.
And in the past up to the present, are you usually pretty close to where you want to be with closing season down to your what number of bushels you want to catch? Are you usually pretty close to that?
Well, this is the first time we've had to close this season, but I think that when we decided not to close in October, which was the first time we did, we figured that we would, you know, it would be very close, and we ended up going over. And based on that, we figured that we'd be very close or go over again in the spring, and that's why we closed. So the prediction, we almost closed in early in October, based on the same calculations that we did. But we didn't, in part because we had that extra quota there in the fall and it was going to be closed. So based on that decision not to close, basically went through the same process to make the decision in the spring, and that's why we did close. So it was an accurate prediction in the fall season for the spring.
So really the chances are you caught more than 120,000 last year, even though you're only showing 111.
I would say so, yes.
The only problem I see with it, if you take 20,000 from them, and then next year you allow 100,000, and when you get to 90, you cut it off like you did the 111 this year, they're going to be lost again. So I suggest leave it where it is.
I do too.
Yeah.
That's my understanding.
I mean, it's plenty of seed out, right? I mean, it's not a question of provision.
I would be fine if that Mac wanted to make that recommendation.
If things got dire, you could always change it. Is that correct?
By emergency regulation, yeah, we could. Yep.
Okay. Well, I know that's happened before.
Let's go.
Is there any merit to having 120?
Well, if you go to 100, then you don't catch 90, you're going to be able to
get it. In terms of a hard quota where there isn't a rollover, in terms of if you caught 40,000 bushels, basically the spring quota was 60,000 bushels, say, it didn't matter what you caught in the fall?
Yeah, just some sort of way that allows the numbers to get tabulated without taking it away from the waterman if it doesn't need to be. I mean, if you find out that it's 114,000, it's still 6,000 they lost from the quota, and going to Mr. George's point, you cut it, then, you know, it's steady shrinking, and, you know, some sort of way to get an accurate number at some point during the cycle.
Well, I mean, it's possible to do that, but, you know, by the time you get to the next season, you're looking at sort of it's hard to manage it the way that you think of it. It would be complicated to do that, I think. But, if the advisory committee wants to recommend not decreasing the quota, I would present that to the commission as your recommendation for the reason.
Yes, in the back, and come forward. State your name, please.
My name is Mark Brown, and I work in James River. I buy seed oysters and other oysters at the time. The quota has not been caught. A lot of these numbers are infatuated, and I'll explain to you why. There's very few watermen that are honest. When you go to a place that buys a tub, puts them on a truck, they get tabulated, that's accurate. Probably half of these oysters are caught that way. The other half are lumped. And if some of y'all don't know what that means, is they tong them in the boat, and they go plant them on the ground, they call it 200, 300 bushels. They get paid for that. But they're getting paid for 100 bushels and 125 bushels because that's what they're actually catching. The same boat that catches 300 and plants them on ballast ground comes to my place and puts out 150 bushels. Same load. that's all of it in a nutshell. And you can believe me if you want, or if you choose not to, that's fine. But that's exactly what's happened, and that's why we're in the situation we're in. It's not Mr. Button's fault. It wasn't Mr. Weston's fault. It's their own fault.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what has happened. You should leave it exactly like it was and don't mess with anything because the quota hadn't been called.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Andrew, I appreciate what you're doing and everything here, but you said a while ago that you know when VMRC takes something away, you can put it back. Tell me when. I've never seen that ever. I'm not in favor of taking anything away. I have to agree with the gentleman down here that I would vote to leave it.
Mm-hmm. Well, gentlemen, we
got one man.
Please come forward and say your name.
My thing is, if we caught the quota early, then there's obviously not a depletion. If the quota wasn't met, then there's a depletion because you can't catch a quota. But if the seed quota was caught a month early, then that means that they were plentiful, right? I mean, if you think about it. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
No, there's no more boats. So, I mean, if we're catching something before the allotted time for that quota is set, then it obviously means there was an abundance of seed and they're not depleted, because if they were depleted, then the whole seed season would have been over with and there would have only been 90,000 reported. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah.
I don't get, I mean, when there's nothing, when the resource isn't there, it can't be caught. You know, and if it's caught ahead of time schedule and season, you know, he's saying we hit the quota early. So if you hit a quota a month early, then it was plentiful. That's obvious. Well, I'm not saying give them nothing, but don't take. I mean, I'm not saying give us anything, but don't take when there's no need to take. I mean, I understand y'all got to make new laws and things got to be changed and this and that all the time. But if there's no reason to take, why take? You know, now, like I said, if April came and only 50,000 had been reported seeds sold, then there's a problem. Then the quota hasn't been met. They can't be caught. There's a depletion. But year after year, you know, it's still there, and it's obviously not depleted. I mean, there's no fish this year. Pound netters aren't catching any fish. There's a depletion of fish.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, who's catching spot and croaker? There's a depletion of those. There's plenty of oysters, and the numbers show it. I mean, year after year, we get cut, and we get cut, and we get cut. But we still catch our quotas constantly. I mean, it's not like we're not making our numbers. I mean, if there's a shortage in the industry, then there's no need to do it, you know. And if we're making numbers, like he said, watermen aren't going to work where they can't make a dollar, you know. Who's going croaker fishing tomorrow? No one. I mean, I'm not trying to be, you know, smart or anything. I'm just stating fact.
Yeah.
You know, would you go open a landscaping business in Arizona in the middle of a desert? No. There's no grass to cut. And, I mean, if there's a shortage, it shows, you know what I'm saying? If you're cutting us off early because we've already hit a quota, then there's no shortage, in my eyes. And, I mean, I don't know what else to say about it. I've been sitting here and listening, and what I come to. If we're catching them before the allotted, I mean, seed season got cut short because the quota was hit before the season was over with. Sounds like it was plenty of seed to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you let Maryland get some.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Make a motion.
Need a motion?
Andrew,
I'm sorry. Just go.
I think I heard what I was going to say. I make a motion that we adopt the regulation to address 28.2546 and leave the quota where it stands at 120.
I second the motion.
We have a motion and a second.
Second.
Any discussion?
Further discussion?
Well, yes, one thing that I'd like to add, and I've been doing this for a long time, and I can remember when dead cows were floating down the river from floods and stuff like that, and that when the guys would go out there and oyster, there might have been three or four boats working in the James River because nobody could catch enough oysters to make a living, period. So, you know, things do change. I don't know that you were around then. I know Jim was, but, you know, those kind of things happen. So it's, you know, I know where all these guys are coming from because I've been there and done that.
All right, we have a motion and a second. I'll call a question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Unanimous.
You on there, Jackie or Dan?
All right, Mr. Button, thank
you. Okay.
I'm sorry, we didn't hear your vote.
Did you hear the motion?
I'm in favor. Thank you. Yes.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for discussion there. Appreciate the comments from Waterman here. So what I'd like to do with the harvest season is I'm going to try to, well, first let me pass this out here.
Different from the free land.
Yeah, one of them.
So what I'd like to do in this proposed season, mind you, is trying to run through all the areas, break it up, kind of go over the reason why I have it proposed in each area like this, and then kind of open it up for discussion at the end. Just to go through it by area. We'll kind of go from there if that's how it works.
Yes, go ahead, please.
So first off, this is just a scatter shot of the spat set that we got in 2016 and all the rivers combined that we survey with our patent time surveys. The brown shell volume is on the bottom. That includes live oysters. Number of spat per square meter, an area about the size of what you can reach in front of you, is on this side here. So this is 2016. It was a pretty good spat set in most areas. 2017, you notice the scale. This is 900 up here, 900 spat per square meter. This is 500 up here. So it looks about the same, but that scale drops down. So the spat set collectively baywide wasn't quite as good as it was in 2016. 2015 was a very good year. So it's cyclical, but the spat sets haven't been phenomenal this last year. They've been okay. This year, we don't know for sure, but there has been a lot of fresh water. Some areas are seeing decent spat sets. Some areas not so great. We'll know more after our patent tong survey, but it doesn't look like it's going to be the 2016 spat set that we'll be working on in terms of oysters last year and this year. So I think, Tommy, you mentioned that at some point wanting to know the number of harvesters participating in the fishery. So this is just a breakdown to sort of keep in mind. This is 2015, 2016, 2017. This is 2018. This number is probably going to go up. This is just sort of the full-time guys who reported harvest in the fall or in the spring of this year, too. This is the licenses sold by gear in 2017. So some people bought more than one license, but just to sort of keep in mind that this is the number of licenses that were purchased for hand tongs here, 106 licenses for patent tongs sold last year. That doesn't necessarily mean that they participated in that fishery, but those are the number of boats that were, or individual harvesters who were purchasing a license and maybe considering it. 835 people purchased the hand scrape gear license, by far the most popular, and 341 purchased the dredge gear license. So there are some folks who just purchased everything and don't do anything with it, but this is just sort of to have in your mind the sort of latent effort that exists in the fishery and the different gear types as we work our way through the season.
Andrew,
yes.
Before you move on, do you have any idea of, I see like you have 835 hand scrape licenses. How many of those licenses were active?
I don't have that exact breakdown of those licenses, but this is in this year, 962 people were reporting harvest total. So of these, I don't have that broken down at this time by active.
Okay.
But those are the number of licenses sold.
Thank you.
We can get that if you want it at some point. But
no, I was just curious if you had an idea.
Is that hard to get?
But the number of active licenses? No, no. This is the carryover of Jim's old graphs there with new data updated to it. So this is the public and private oyster harvest from the 2017-18 season here. We do have pretty good numbers on this. Some of the private ground numbers aren't completely updated, but for the purposes of this graph, we took what was harvested last year. If we don't have a good number for this month, then added it to this to sort of get an average. But based on the reporting in from the fall, it looks like private ground has probably dropped off slightly, approximately 338,000 bushels, about 10,000 bushels down. Public ground production increased by about the same, so that's sort of see why you level it off there. Public ground increased 254,000 bushels from around 240,000 the previous year. So it kind of made up for the downtick in public ground. I showed this last time just sort of as a breakdown of public versus private for the 2016 calendar year. Just so folks get an understanding of how kind of interrelated the fisheries are there. This is containerized aquaculture here. This is private ground production caught with traditional gear, so dredges, scrapes, tongs by hand. And this is a public ground production. So this includes spat on shell, which is hatchery-based, about another 15 to 20% or so. But overall, you know, 80% of Virginia's fishery is still, you know, caught traditionally as of 2016. As we work through for folks, sort of keep this in mind. So when you see the charts, this is hand tong, this color code, hand scrape, dredge, patent tong by hand. And I would propose these bushel limits by gear type this year. So hand scrape and dredge would stay at 8 bushels. Patent tong areas, and this is, you know, if there's any season change, might have to adjust this depending on what it was. But if the season that I'm going to present goes as presented, then these would be the bushel limits for gear type. I would propose a 10 bushel limit for patent tong areas. All areas would be 10 bushels for patent tong. And any of the hand tong or by hand areas would stay at 12 bushels for that limit there as we work through the areas.
Is that all areas by hand and by tong or the same bushel limit?
Yes. That would include, No, any area that was open to hand tong would have that 12 bushel limit and by hand as well. Yes. Yeah, if it was a hand tong area. So I'm going to put this up quick just so folks can get a look at it. And what I wanted to sort of compliment everyone here on the season that we put together last year, I think it worked out well in terms of our goals of spreading out harvester effort, ensuring that there was a stable oysters coming in for the people who need them when they need them, both on the buying side and the harvesting side, and also that we left the end of the oyster season without, you know, there were still oysters there, so people weren't in most areas, you know, grinding down to just the cinders there. So we left a little something, and people were still catching a limit in most areas right up until the end. So the way that we did that last year was by having multiple areas and multiple gear types open at the same time, so that there wasn't a focused effort like there has been in years past where only one area is open October 1st and you have all the hand scrape boats in Virginia all in that one area. So we spread it out with the James last year and the Rappahannock area, and we do something similar that year. So just keep this in mind as we work our way through.
I didn't understand that one. That was a good question.
Well, I'll go ahead and work it all the way through.
Up there, I wanted to ask, so we see if the phone. No, we're
where it says Patton Tong Plant and Tree for October. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Area 1 in James and Area 5 and 9. Does that mean we're going to be allowed to do it at the same time, or we have to wait for each other, like, it's both of us in 1 month.
Right.
So what does that mean for Area 5? I'm going to be dredging around and Patton Tong?
No. Yeah. So what? In that proposed season, the first 2 weeks of the season would be Patton Tong only.
So if you don't have a boat that's capable of Patton Tonging, you can't go to work that month?
No.
Well, the first 2 weeks of that month?
No.
If you don't have a boat that's capable of using a big mast and power tongs, you can't go to work some of us work in smaller boats.
Still
can't raise power tongs, but he can drag a dredge.
Gentlemen, this is just proposals right now. There's a whole bunch of proposals up here. We haven't.
I understand. I was just asking while the chart was up.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine.
But you know,
a month ago, there was only 100 patent tong licenses sold last year, 800 dredge licenses. So for 2 weeks of October, 800 dredges are going to be out of business while 100 patent tongers are allowed to work.
That hasn't been.
I understand that, but that's what's proposed.
Oh, no, we know that. We know that.
I was just asking while I was on the chart.
Okay.
I'm sorry if I interrupted.
I'm sorry.
So just to go over this real quick, this would denote that hand scrape only the first half of the month, so a two-week season. This is, as we just discussed, patent tong for the first half of the month, hand scrape for the second, and then everything else, 8-bushel limit, 10-bushel limit, 12-bushel limit, and these are the areas there. So what worked out well last year was we spread out the areas. There wasn't a lot of boats piled up in one area. There were still oysters to catch when the area was left, and everyone was, for the most part, getting a good limit there. So that's what, in this proposed season, I'd like to try to do again. Keep in mind that the last 2 years are a little bit different in terms of compared to this year. The last 2 years, one of the ways that we spread out that season was by having a five-month season in the James, and some of the other areas were stretched out longer. And part of the way that we were able to do that without having an impact to the resource was we were working on very good spat sets in 2015 and previous years. So now we're starting to sort of finish up that, and we're getting into a season that not only is it going to be working off the great spat sets we've had, we haven't gotten a great spat set in 2017, and this year some areas will be okay, but it probably won't be the best. And we're also dealing with other areas that had some freshwater loss that's going to shift effort to other areas further down where there still are oysters. So sort of keep that in mind, that this season I'd hope is going to be as good as last season, but some of the changes are going to be proposed to address those concerns in terms of the freshwater loss and the lower spat sets we're working on. In terms of looking long term, that, you know, in 5 years from now, we're not saying, you know, why did we open this area and really pound it down, when if we hadn't left it open quite as long or switched to a different gear type, that might have provided spat set for other areas that now we're regretting that we didn't make that change today or in the future. So just sort of keep that in mind as we work through this. That it's, every year is different, obviously, but this year isn't the same as last year particularly. So we'll start in the James River. Just to keep in mind that this is the loss that we saw in these upper areas. So a lot of that seed harvest effort, there's not a lot of people that work up that way, but it's going to be, anyone that was, it's going to be shifted down, and there is some loss in these lower areas, and anecdotally there's some reports of some other loss in some of the other areas. So that there is going to be effort moved around in these areas, in the hand tong areas of the James. Still, you can see that the proposed seasons are unchanged in the hand tong areas. So seed oysters would run from October through May, and clean cull would run from October through April. SMAC has recommended no change to the seed harvest quota. I would probably, as staff, still recommend the 100,000 bushel quota change, but I would definitely present the concerns of the members here at SMAC, as well as what I've heard here tonight to the Commission at August meeting in terms of that bushel change. So this is just the whole James River scrape area is this line right here and downriver. This is the upper James River standing stock. So you can see in 2016, it was sort of the peak. This orange area here is number of markets. The blue is number of smalls. And this is really when we got that really great spat set, and you can see that jumped up. And since the increased levels of harvest weren't complemented again by that same level of spat set, we have seen the total standing stock in the upper James River start to come down. This is just a breakout of the markets, and you can see there's some ups and downs. But once again, there was a considerable drop-off after that 140,000 bushels of seed was removed in 2016 in the number of markets available in the whole James River Hantong area. And those are those high-dollar, $40 a bushel versus $7 a bushel markets that potentially a chunk of those were lost in that James River seed. This is the small. Same, you can see that the standing stocks are starting to come down. This is an outline of the areas. So we split the areas up. We didn't close any areas. We just sort of staggered their opening. This is Rainbow Farm, James River Bridge. This is what we consider Area 1, Area 2, and Area 3. And last year, Area 2 was open, and Area 1 and 3 were open together. That would be the same sort of staggered opening this year. Area 1 and 3, which is this, is Area 3. This is Area 1 would be open first to just a two-week-long patentong season in October. James River was open to the first time in October for hand scrape last year, so this year we're proposing just to see who gears up for it, see what kind of effort you get from a hantong fishery there in the James in that first 2 weeks of October, followed by hand scrape from October 15th through December, and then that 2 weeks that was in patentong in October to make up for that 2 weeks in October, that would be shifted to February here. So jumping back real quick, this is sort of the impact of that harvest and the spat set coming through. This is a little bit busy right here, but what you're seeing in the red is the pre-harvest numbers of all size classes of oysters, and what you're seeing in blue is the post-harvest, so in the spring. And this is 2015, 2016, 2016, 2017, 2017, 2018. And what you see is this is a whole lot of spat right here, this area. And you can see them kind of coming through in these numbers. And you get to this last season and you see that there's not a whole lot of difference between, or there's a considerable drop off in the number of spat that you're seeing. And you're seeing that the number of the after harvest, this difference right here, that's the number of oysters that are dying. So these are oysters that are under market size that are disappearing after harvest. And this is, you know, these are small oysters, and if the red is higher than the blue, then there's more before and then less after. So after harvest, a lot of small oysters basically are disappearing. So that was, you know, just all oysters right there of all size classes. This is just the James River area, so what we have proposed sort of a bigger view. So clean cull throughout April. This is that patentong hand scrape October season, hand scrape in November and December. And then that 2 weeks would get that was lost in October there would be open again in February here. So there wouldn't actually be a loss of any harvest days for the patentong areas. So it wouldn't be taking anything like that. Area 2 would be hand scrape from November to January, and then the seed oysters October through May.
What's Area 2? Where's that exactly?
This is Thomas Rock area here.
Why couldn't you take Area 2 and just take the first 2 weeks of October hand scrape area so the guys that have small boats would have a place to work? Why couldn't you just do that in Area 2 for 2 weeks and change the other one around?
Well, I guess...
I mean, it's you're gonna let them catch oysters there anyway. Why don't you just do that where the small boats can work? There's a lot of small boats out there.
Yeah. No. The seasons here are, if you do that, then you have to do that in all the other areas. You wouldn't have to, but that would be defeat the purpose that we established last year of having multiple scrape areas open at once. So any kind of changes, you'd have to change.
See,
that,
there's no scrape area open at all the first 2 weeks.
So that means all 805 scrapers could potentially be piled up in Area 2 for 2 weeks.
Why are we coming up with Pat and Tongi? I mean, you got here Area 9 in Pocomo. Some of these places only got 5 foot of water. Have you ever worked a set of patent tongs in 5 foot of water?
Yes.
It can be scary. Better have a life jacket on.
This is just to see if these areas, if what number of boats would gear up, just to see what kind of harvest would come out of these areas. So I'm not saying you have to.
Yeah.
But
I'm looking. They're getting 10 bushels, and Handscrape get 8. I got nothing against patent tonging, but I just wonder where it's coming from. I mean, do you anticipate in the future going all patent tonging?
No, I don't. I think that that areas that you can make a living as patent tongs, if the oyster population gets up where you can catch a 10 bushel limit there by 8, 9, or 10 o'clock in the morning, there's not as much impact to the shell resource as there is by scraping and dredging. You're not spreading that out.
I've done them both. It's going to be a long time before you catch that many with patent tongs compared to a dredge, you know.
No, I'm not saying there's no no disagreement that dredging and scrapes are definitely more efficient, but if you can make it work with a pair of tongs there and you get an area up to that level, then it's potentially a good reason to do that.
So if I understand what you just said with this patent tong thing, you're taking 2 weeks of a season that people can I finish, please? Thank you. Taking 2 weeks of a season that people depend on to do an experiment of what might happen if you opened it to patent tong. And
this is what you just said
to see, so we can see what might happen if it were open to patent tong. And now messing with here is people's livelihoods. You're not messing, this ain't a game, it's not a scientific experiment. It's managed for the resource and for the people who benefit from the resource.
Well, if you look at the length of the seasons, actually, you're getting an additional 2 weeks of patent tong, and you're not losing any hand scrape time.
But they're losing their money in October.
The guy
just said over there and told you a lot of boats don't have patent tong rigs.
Exactly. There's a lot of boats.
You know, and those guys deserve to make a living too.
All they gotta do is buy a rig. If you look at the season last year, there was...
Well, let's look at it for this year. But heck with last year, you could take a little bit of that, one of those other things, and put it right there on October for 2 weeks.
And
that way nobody gets hurt except for your feelings.
My feelings won't get hurt. The point that I'm trying to make is that I'm not taking any... There's no loss of the number of days that you can go hand scraping in any of these proposed seasons that we're talking about right here. What you're getting is the added benefit of an additional 2 weeks to harvest with a different gear type. So you're getting something. You're not losing anything in this proposed season right here.
And you're getting the same amount of time to hand scrape that you've always got.
I think the whole problem is they don't want your patent tong in the hand scrape area. Mm-hmm. So I just take the patent tong off the hand scrape area, and just wherever the patent tongs work, they can't approach.
Anyway, I'll be honest with you, it wouldn't bother me if somebody wanted to put a patent tong rig on and patent tong, and I was hand scraping, it wouldn't bother me one bit. I've done them both. I know which one I'd rather do, but I don't want to knock somebody else that's got a patent tong rig out that wants to go try it. But I mean,
that one had his hand up in the back.
Where is with my dredge?
free to operate on a rough day than a set of patent tongs. And it would be so much more work for me to switch over my... Everyone on the eastern shore uses stump rigs. They don't use masters and exits. So switch over gear type for us isn't just untying his rig and tying on a set of $450 tongs. Find a
where'd you get them at?
Traditionally, James River areas have been open for 3 months.
That's correct.
Right. So you're adding 2 weeks to it.
On the back end, though.
Well, James River hasn't until last year been open at all in October.
I mean, what if
it was last year?
Rabbit hunt this field.
It was open last year.
In the last 2 weeks of rabbit season, you can come hunt this field.
Yeah.
There's not going to be many rabbits left in that field.
My suggestion, if you ain't going to open until the 15th, take the patent on and off.
Wait, these are all just proposals right now.
Just open area 8 for patent on. Because I ain't going to James River no way.
Where is it you're patent on right now? In the bay?
But I used to patent on the whole river.
We've got your point.
Well, the good devil was invented in there.
I'm too pointy.
But
we were patent on it 50 years ago now. The grudge you never was. $200 in there.
Handscrape's not open anywhere in the state of Virginia for the first 2 weeks.
Up in Houghton.
This is just for the James River. I'm going to work through the rest of the other areas. if we can wait till the end for our questions, you'll focus on the same thing
there. All right. What we're going to do now is we're going to let Mr. Button proceed with his proposals. After he gets done, then we'll open the floor for discussion.
All right, moving on to the hand scrape areas in the upper portion of the bay. So this is the Mobjack Bay area. last year we had Holtz's Bar here open. These are notoriously slow-growing oysters, but this year we're going to have both areas, Toasteak and Holtz's Bar, open for proposed for the month of January, just a hand scrape only here. This is the current standing stocks.
So they were very high last year, but a lot of them were small oysters. So this separation between the blue and orange, this is the number of markets. So it looks like this coming season, the number of markets compared to the number of smalls will be substantially higher than it was, which is good news for these oysters that tend to hover right around 3 inches. Moving on to the Rappahannock, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of discussion on this. It's just proposed right now. So I'd like to work through this, and then at the end, again, we can take discussion on this. So keep in mind that this is Russ's Rock, this area up here. We saw almost 50 to 100% loss of all the oysters in this area of the river. So oysters, when they spawn, particularly in the Rappahannock, it's not a trap estuary like the James. Spat tends to go downriver. There's no hard model that says oysters spawn here and they go here. But if you have lots of oysters upriver, you're probably going to get more sat downriver, and if you lose some, you're probably going to get less. So we saw 100% loss in these upper river areas. These are the Hantong areas of Area 9. The further up you go and the closer to some of these side tributaries, the heavier loss that we saw there, and the sort of the 10 to 50% loss. The good news is here. Here's Muratico Bar right here. This is the area that's scheduled to be open this year. This area we are seeing much less loss to sort of normal loss in this area. So this was Area 7 that was a hand scrape area last year. This is Area 8 this year. So this is just a reference, Area 8 down here, Area 9, this is the Hantong area. Area 5 is scheduled to come on this year. This is the standing stock for Area 5. This is the last time it was harvested. This was the standing stock prior to the harvest year in 2015. So you can see that this gap between smalls and markets was a little higher than it is now, but the overall standing stock based on our 2017 survey is higher than this point. So depending on how many of these oysters got up to that market size, would be how the season compares to that the last time it was open. Area 3, this is the Norris Bridge for reference. Parrots Island here, this area is scheduled to come into rotation. Here are the standing stocks for this area. Again, this is the standing stock prior to the last time this area came into rotation here in 2015. So you can see the overall standing stocks are higher. But this gap between small oysters and markets is a little bit smaller, so depending on how many of these small oysters reach market size will be how it compares to the last time this area was open. This is the Great Wicomico area that we split into two rotation areas last year. Area 1, this upper area, was open last year. This year, Great Wicomico Rotation Area 2 would be the one scheduled to be open. This is the Deep Rock Patentong area, and unlike almost all the other areas that are open to hand scrape in the state, this is an area that's received very little replenishment. The first time we planted shells here was last year in a good long while, and without any replenishment, so all the other hand scrape areas routinely have thousands of bushels of shell planted on them by the replenishment department. This area that's been open to Patentong has since 2008 here, almost tripled in the number of oysters there on that Patentong area. This is the proposed seasons for these areas. So Deep Rock would stay the same as it was last year. Patentong season from December through February. This is Rappahannock Area 3. It would be closed in October. In Area 6 last year, we opened up a month of patentonging before the area was opened up to hand scrapes, in addition to the normal 2 months of hand scrape season there. And when the hand scrapes finished, they were still catching their limit right up to the end. So this patentong area, if you want to make the hunting analogy, it's sort of like having a bow season before your gun season. You sometimes do that first, and there's still plenty when you start shooting. So this is the hand scrape season there in December and January. Based on what happened in Area 6 last year, this should work out in a similar manner. Area 5, this is the now much debated half patent tong, half hand scrape season, followed by a full month of hand scrape, and then you're not losing anything here. It's in February, that 2 weeks in the beginning of February for hand scrape. So these areas have always been a 2 month hand scrape season with no patent tong. They're staying a 2 month hand scrape season with an additional 2 weeks of patent tong, and this one an additional month. Area 8, keep in mind this is proposed here. There's been some discussion about patent tongs, but keeping in mind the level of loss that we saw in the upper river areas, I'm not saying that it's definitively where the spat come from, but Area 8 has a lot of oysters right now in high enough densities where patent tongs should be able to make a good season up there working for a solid 3 months. So the whole time, with the exception of that first 2 weeks, there's going to be hand scrape areas open in the Rappahannock to hand scrape on, with an additional hand scrape only season when there's no patent tonging in the Rappahannock here in February. And the reason for having this as a patent tong only is when you use a hand scrape, you can catch oysters much more efficiently. So when they get down to a level where there's only a couple oysters here and there, you can still catch them. With a patent tong, you're obviously going to miss some oysters. And due in part to the loss in the upper river areas and the potential impact to the downriver areas of not having that broodstock population in these upper river areas, that's one of the reasons that I would propose leaving this as a 3 month patent tong season. I would be more than open to the idea that if it doesn't look like, you know, if the patent tong boats aren't cutting it there, that December here could be made a patent or a hand scrape season in this area if it needs to be in order to support the fishery and the peak harvest times here in December. If it does look like people are still catching plenty of oysters here in December and any patent tong boats that are working in this area are still happily catching their limit and the hand scrapers in other areas are doing the same, I think it may be worth leaving it as a patent tong only area. Once you scrape a patent tong area, which we have tried in various areas before, it takes a much, much longer time for it to get back up to a level where it works as a patent tong area. Unless you get a phenomenal spat set and shell plants and you're still looking at 3 years there. But if you're still catching a patent tong limit at the end, the chances are you can come back there again the next year and do the same. That's not usually the case with a hand scrape area once it's sort of been exhausted. Area 9 would stay a hand tong area there in November and December. And the Great Wicomico, Blackberry Hangs, as we talked, would be open in December and February. I think the original season I had this open in November, but my understanding that input from SMAC members is the meat quality isn't always the best there. January, there's still going to be other areas open, and then these areas would finish up in February for a full month hand scrape season there. I'll just go ahead and work through the rest of this, and then we can open it, go back to those graphs there. So the Tangier Pocomoke, the area scheduled to come into rotation is area area 2 this year. This is the standing stocks for Area 2. So the last time it came into rotation was here in 2015. So our total standing stock is a little bit higher. The gap between smalls and markets is similar. So it should be a similar season potentially there in terms of the number of oysters. This was Area 1 that was open last year. You can see that there was a much larger gap. You can also notice the scale is different here. So there's that. This is the area that's going to be open this year, Area 2 here, and Area 2 here in the Pocomoke. I'm proposing we did get some additional replenishment work done in Area 9 and 10 this year. I made the commitment that once we replenish an area that we'd open that up to hand scrape. And I think that, you know, there's been a lot of discussion back and forth with the Saxis watermen and the Eastern Shore folks about Area 9 and 10. I think that there should be a season of oysters there, and hopefully the shell that we planted there will get a set. Now that there's shell there, I don't think it'll have the same impact that harvesting it would have had before there was a lot of, when all that was there was living oysters and there wasn't any substrate under them. So I would propose opening this year. And this is the seasons for the Pocomoke and Tangier area. One change from last year is just area 2 on the Pocomoke side, so the Shell Rock area, proposed just having a 2-month season. This area was really getting worked down last year, the Pocomoke generally and the year before. And I think 3 months of dredging on it probably wouldn't benefit it. And Tangier area 2, that would still remain the same 3-month season. And again, in public ground number 9 there in Upper Pocomoke, hand scrape season to coincide with the opening of hand scrape on the other side, as well as, if you want, a patent tongue season here. And the hand scrape season, again, in February to compensate for that shortening of the Pocomoke, and that would coincide with other 2-week hand scrape seasons in other areas. So here we are again back at this chart that had all that I just discussed covered there, and that's what I've got for that, and open it up to discussion and questions.
Panel, do you have any questions?
Wayne?
Yes.
Andrew, I think the biggest problem, or one problem that we're going to have with a 2-week season in October and February or March, whatever it is when we go to these places to work, we have to rent a slip at a marina, and whether we do it or our buyers do it for us, the money has to be put out, and you have to pay for a month. You don't pay by the day. So that to me is something that's going to cost the waterman an additional amount of money by splitting the season up like that. I don't know how anybody else feels about it. Tommy, I mean, don't you see that yourself?
Good point.
Yeah. Kevin? Yeah.
Very good point.
Yeah.
I think one of the ways I definitely heard that from a number of individuals, and I definitely hear you on that. And one of the ways to try to alleviate some of that is to have areas both in the Rappahannock and in the James and in the Eastern Shore all opening up simultaneously, so that you won't have the – I'm sure there's some people who are going to go mm-hmm. where they're going to go, but in this proposed season that there's areas in the sort of the major centers, if you will, that are all open at the same time mm-hmm. so that people could – that's always the ask is, you know, I'd like to work close to home, so sort of the way it's split up now, they should be able, most areas, to do that.
Mm-hmm. And another thing, another thought, and Ernie, you can help me on this. I know this is really patent-tongue heavy, and that's fine for the people that are patent-tongue, and I'm sure Ernie's in favor of it. He's a good patent-tonger. But, you know, Area 8, I mean, how many people are you going to actually think you're going to get to Patong up there? I mean, that's a long. There's nowhere to tie up. That's a big problem, you know, for the big boats. Plenty, you know, some room for Carolina skiffs and all. I mean, Ernie, you'd have to run all the way from Carter's Creek, wouldn't you? Yeah.
Greenbelt.
Oh, Greenbelt. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I just would like to see more on the hand scrape side as opposed to the Patong side. Because I'm a hand scraper.
I don't think we should have to go in before the hand scrapes.
Uh-huh.
I think you should let them have in James River, and you should let them have Area 5. Mm-hmm. But I think the patentongers should get somewhere to work.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
In the first 2 months, October, November.
Mm-hmm. I
know there's probably 20 of us.
Mm-hmm.
If I can't patentong, I'm going to be right there on Area 5.
Mm-hmm.
And Ernie's going to catch his limit every day on Area 5.
Well, the old option 2
that
we had last time, we had patentong for Area 8 for the month of October. And then the month of November, we picked up Area 3. So that gave them a month in October, a month in November. Then you had your 3 months at deep rock. So that was, you know, it was covered pretty good in 3 different areas. You had 5 months of patentong season there. And just personally for me, I like that option, option 2. I don't know how anybody else feels about it. But I think that was the fairest one for everybody. Anybody else?
Yeah, I haven't got a problem with number 2 either.
Yeah.
It gives us somewhere to work, and
yeah.
whatever.
And to keep you separate.
You can put up, Andrew.
Let me see if I can pull that up.
Cut off here if you go 40 in the first month.
Yeah, I mean, it could cut up wherever you hit it. So, look.
Gentlemen, please.
That's it.
That's it. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is the one we're going to problem.
For those of you in the audience, this was discussed at our last meeting. This is the second option that we were given. Take a good look at it, and if Andrew doesn't mind, in a couple of minutes, he'll switch to the other two options that we also had. I'll give the audience a chance to look at those also, and the panel can refresh its memory.
This was more tong-centric there, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Which one is this, Andrew?
Option three.
This is option three.
You got it?
Oh, there you got the hand scraping on top right there. These are just to
fill up the This is more traditional.
No, option two
it is. Option two it is.
That's option two right now, right?
This is option two.
That's option all two. In. The only
with this option?
No, not with this option. With the other one.
It's a long ways from everything. I can tell you that.
The only thing different on this one really is the Pat and Thomas lose Area 1 in James River, but had a two-week split there.
Yeah. I'm not going James. None of us going James River. No way.
How much pressure would you get there anyway?
Is Dan on the phone?
We haven't heard him yet.
Don, what are you hearing on the area, the Pocomo? Have you talked to Dan about that?
Yeah. What are you talking about?
The regular dredge season.
Well, as far as the 2 month on Shell Rock, we're fine with that because that's all it needs, really.
Okay.
As far as Area 9, when I see this up here, yeah, it's in January. I'd rather have the hand scrape open up in February because you're exactly right there, too. Yeah. I would say the hand scrape open up in the month of October would be better than what you're proposing because if we're down to Shell Rock December 1st in January, why open up Area 9 in January? It gives us an extra 2 weeks from something. We're losing a month. And if there's nothing down there, we're not going to be there anyway. But the thing of it is, if February had the 2 months, had the hand scrape, or November or October, I don't like the hand scrape in the month of January because we've got 2 months. And you're giving us 2 extra weeks in a hand scrape area, but you're giving it into 2 weeks of the only 2 months we have to dredge, if you understand what I'm saying. You know, we're used to three, and if you would do it in February or do it...
Well, do you think there's still going to be people working in January after scrape dredging for a month in the boat?
Well, we don't know. We don't know. You know, I'll tell you what, with Saxes, the weather killed us last year. We stayed in 20-some days where everybody else was working, dying sane.
Maybe if you move it to November.
That would be fine with me.
November.
I'd really have it in November, yeah.
Move it to November instead of
November, December, and January, we'd have open. I just hate to see the hand scrape open up 2 weeks in the regular power dredge season. You know, it's
plus the lava will be ice.
Yeah, well, it was like last year. If you all want a job where you want to retire early, move there. That's all I got to say. 20-some days is what we stayed in. And I think Dan could tell you if he's on there now, Tangier worked a lot of those days. And we had ice from the harbor to the Creek Beacon. Donnie got his big boat on it, trying everything in the world to break it. Plenty of water from the Creek Beacon on 8. You see the Marylanders coming over from Virginia, which you see that. Well, you see that normally, whether it's ice or not. But anyway, you're sitting there to the dock drinking coffee. It's I don't know. I think that would be better, Andrew, in November, October, myself.
So hand scrape. November for hand scrape and public ground 9. Is there any?
Yeah, that'd be fun.
We could potentially way forward here is SMAC members want to make recommendations to this version here. We could have a vote on both what I have proposed and this. Sort of see where that goes.
Sure, sure. Well, we work on motions and
make one comment, Don. Just one thing about October. Usually, the oysters over there pour in October. If you shuck them,
you're right there.
November is better.
So what month would you say? February?
I said November.
November's better. I think November.
Oh, November. Yeah. I'd rather do it in November too. That way, everybody gets the benefit from it. We don't.
Yeah.
Hopefully, we can get a little money for a fighter oyster.
That quality of the oyster and potentially a higher price was part of the consideration for moving the
hand
scrape season.
Yeah. I mean,
to the middle of October.
When I heard the season was going to be open up.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Kellum. Gentlemen, please. Ms. Kellum.
Taking amendments to Proposal 2, I would propose that in the Great Wicomica and Blackberry Hang that we move that to December and February.
As another season to both.
As you had proposed in your revised proposal.
I'm going to ask a stupid question now.
Mr. George.
If you open all these places in October, is it packers going to be able to handle them, or are they going to be poor? Or, I mean, you don't want to run in selling your oysters for nothing the first 2 weeks when you could hold off 2 weeks and put it on the end when the oysters are good. That's what I was asking.
The way you want to do it?
Like this?
But they just said they had 2 weeks on.
In other words, would you rather have 30 or get 50 for them?
I'd rather know I'm going to catch my 8 every day.
I don't know if I will.
At the end, I don't know if I'm going to catch my 8.
You ain't going to know now either.
At the end, I don't.
You're not going to know.
But you're going to be power tonging that one, aren't you? The first 2 weeks, you're going to be power tonging overboard.
Not in the hand scraper, are you?
But still, that month, the month of October, the first day of October, you're going to drop power tongs in the water and make the days work. I'm not. Plain and simple.
Thank you, Art.
Yeah, you will on option 2.
Power tongs and hand tongs are it. Why are they different than us? Why should they be allied to something?
Look, they're not different than you. You can do it too.
Not if my boat won't let me.
Well, I can't help that.
Well, I can't help.
You can always get a boat.
When I'm your age, maybe I can have a bigger boat.
Tell me.
So what you're saying is put a small man out for...
That is not what I'm saying. That tong is for everybody.
Tell me, please.
Yeah, can you put a patent on your boat?
No.
Can you put a patent on your boat?
Gentlemen, we operate on motions here.
Order, please. Please.
I'd like to make a motion, Wayne.
Yes.
I would go in there with a hand scrape.
Please. Gentlemen.
Okay, see.
He said, I caught my limit every day.
How many boats did you buy oysters from last year when they opened up Power Tongue in the Rapid?
Well, Area 6, area probably, six. Yeah. Probably 5 to...
How many of them caught their limit? How many caught their limit every day?
The good ones caught the limit, and the ones that didn't just stopped. We had some boats that just stopped altogether. So
that ain't what I'm talking about. I'm asking you really get 30 for them or 50.
Ernest, I take 30 Ernest over trying. Not working, yes. I would take $30 for 8 bushels over not working because I can feed my children off $30. I can't feed them off of nothing.
I think what Ernest is trying to say is he would give up the month of October for November to get 50 instead of 30 is what he meant.
I can't do that.
Huh?
If it's bad as long as the first 2 weeks, they're
going to
be getting that
30. No, but he's saying even though he's passing, he'd run
Let me make this motion. I might answer your question.
Yeah, no, whatever. Let's go.
Never mind.
I'd like to make a motion that we accept option number 2. I think it's a good, fair split between the hand scrapers and the patent tongers. Patent tongers have 5 months to work. The hand scrapers have 5 months to work. I'd like to add the changes that Tommy talked about, the Great Wicomico, and the changes that Diane was talking about in Pocomoke Sound.
Before he makes this motion, we weren't done making changes, I don't believe.
Oh, okay.
So we don't have to go back and amend the motion.
Okay.
I would also suggest, being as seed is on a quota, there's no need to start the seed season in James River 2 weeks behind in October. If it's on a quota, if the quota gets filled in October, cut it off when the quota's filled. If it's the end of December when it gets filled, if it doesn't get filled, but there's absolutely no reason to set that back 2 weeks and not open it the 1st of October.
When we were discussing having deep water shoals only open. So that asterisk in the seed oysters there, that would be still on October.
Full month of October. Okay.
You okay then?
Yes, sir. I just wanted to.
Oh, JC, go ahead.
Okay. All right, I'm going to go back over again.
Yes, please, go back over that one more
time. Andrew, I'd like to make a motion that we accept option number 2 presented towards the commission. I think it's a fair option. But Patent Tongas got 5 months working in Area 8, Area 3, and Deep Rock. The hand scrapers get the whole month of October. They get November, December, and January, and February. I think if you look at it from a waterman's perspective, I think it's a good general consensus of a split up for everybody. You know, want to include the changes that Tommy made for the Great Wicomico to move them, you know, from November to February. And changes that Diane made in Pocomoke Sound to move it from January to November.
We have a motion on the floor. We need a second.
Second.
Further discussion?
I have a discussion.
Yes, sir.
The motions that Tommy made, you said November. That's November and Great Wicomico to February and January and Blackberry to February, correct?
Blackberry just Great Wicomico, Tommy?
Yeah, both.
Okay.
Yeah. So let me make sure I have this right. So the season as shown here with Great Wicomico area open in December and then not January and then February. Blackberry the same. Hand scrape in public ground 9 moved to the month of
November.
Mm-hmm. Everything else stays the same.
Further discussion?
Tommy, are you, the month of November, you move into February? You will leave January open?
In Great Wicomico.
Yeah.
And I was proposing that in December, hand scrape was open in Great Wicomico and Blackberry, and then in January, they're closed, okay. And then in February, both areas open again.
Okay.
My reason for that is most of the guys work either or, and on the good days they go to Blackberry, and then on the other days and they keeps that area from getting pounded.
Or whereas January will be all closed up.
Right.
One other thing, Andrew, on the November, that's hand scrape, right, for the whole month. No patent tongue, just plain hand. Okay.
In the James River, you're only 4 months of hand scrape?
No, that, that's just that split like we had last year. So, no, it would still be open though. Area 1 and 3 go together on this. Well, we got the record going here, so area 1 and 3 there, yeah?
Thank you. Gentlemen, any more further discussion?
Yeah, I would like to say that in the James River, you have no hand scrape in February, and that's a hard month for hand tong only with the weather. It really limits the amount of days. I would like to see either one of the areas that's open in November be moved to February.
I think that we made that decision last year, and that graph that I showed you there, that stretched season a little bit too long. Yeah. I think that had too much impact to the resource.
6 months.
So I wouldn't support that on a staff level.
Well,
everybody's going to show up in the Rappahannock this year.
We stayed in area 7 in February.
Well, that is a concern with this season there is February here in the Rappahannock. That would be the only major area open other than the Mob Jack. Is there any concern about moving that back to December there?
The moving the Mob Jack back to December?
No, the area 3 there in the Rappahannock.
All right, 3.
Is that the
I see you skipped December, and that would be January, February.
No bigger than that is, that take care of itself.
Yeah.
There ain't going to be much out.
Yeah, it's not a big area.
That's the smallest area in the row.
Mm-hmm.
So with what we just come up with, can staff support that?
Okay, this was option. What is this? What option is this?
I would definitely present that to the commission. I would still present my season, and I would let the commission make that decision.
You're talking about option. The first option you gave us tonight.
This one here sucks.
I missed that, Mr. Chairman.
This was good.
The proposed one, the first one they talked about. The patent tong had that one.
Well, let's get through this. We have a motion on the floor right now. Let's get through this first.
Okay.
I'll second it.
All right, we have a second on the motion. Does everybody understand the motion?
Yeah.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Cool.
Motion carries unanimous. Now, we get back to the option that Andrew gave us tonight. Now, he says that he is still going to present that to the commission, along with the one we just voted on. So,
I make a motion we don't accept it.
Having said, the problem with that is there's no handscape. Nobody can go handscaping for the first 2 weeks anywhere in the state of Virginia. If I'd like to make a motion that be brought to the attention of the commission, that what staff has recommended would put the fishermen where they couldn't work the first 2 weeks of April with the handscape.
October.
So, I mean, that's fine. You want to say what you want to say, but these guys deserve to be able to work.
And 2 weeks in February.
We can do it.
Don't.
January's going to be froze up. I would take the stuff out of January and put it in there.
Order, please. Listen, we can still have a motion on this and vote on this, and Mr. Button can still present it to the commission.
Hey, Andrew?
Yep. Hold on,
Jackie's coming. Hey, it's Jackie. Sorry, I didn't vote on the last motion. It was admittedly a little hard to follow the discussion, and again, my apologies that I couldn't be there. So just for the record, I'll abstain on that since I wasn't part of the discussion. But for my own record, in your opinion, Andrew, does the proposal that you're going to present with and without the proposed changes by this commission have the same or similar outcomes as far as broodstock conservation and preserving oysters for following seasons?
the option that I would present would most likely preserve more broodstock for following seasons than the option approved unanimously with your abstention by SMAC.
Well, I don't understand that, because you're going to take 2 weeks and put it towards the end. What's the difference? So you say it's – I don't understand that. Can you explain that to me more elaborately?
It's primarily because of Area 8 there. Everything else.
Yeah, but I mean – I'm.
It's just Area 8 would be the consideration in terms of the broodstock there.
You're saying there's no loss because you're putting it out over there, but you're telling her that it would make the broodstock better. Which one is it?
In Area 8?
I'm talking about James River.
In other areas, it would be a conservation equivalency.
Well, that's a much better answer than your first one to her.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's not right.
So you're saying we're going to be more impacted in October than we are in the end of the season?
No, talking about Area 8.
I'm saying in Area 8, there'd be more impact for 2 months of scraping than there would be.
So Area 8 is the only thing that you're concerned with.
You following that, Jackie, that Area 8 would be the one major difference between the two seasons. So just one area in the upper Rappahannock. The other season would be,
In other words, if you left that all for Pat Tong, then everything would be kosher.
Would you like the panel to
give its opinion?
Yeah, that would be great.
On this new proposal that you give us tonight?
Yeah.
I guess we'll need a motion to vote on it. If somebody wants to make a motion.
I'll make the motion to vote on Mr. Button's proposal.
Go ahead.
I just did.
Give me a second. What's the motion?
The motion.
The
vote to accept Mr. Button's proposal from tonight.
First one he gave us tonight.
First proposal.
The one that's been changed since the last time we were here.
Well, I thought we just made a motion to accept.
We did. That's option two.
We just voted no against it.
That's option two. We're talking about.
Oh, the one he gave us.
Yeah.
Okay.
We can either vote no or yes on it.
This is the one they're voting on.
Do we have a motion? Do we have a second?
Well, I'll second it.
We have a second. Any further discussion on it? If not, all in favor of this motion that we were presented tonight, say aye. All opposed, say no.
No.
On the phone, is there a vote? I couldn't.
Jackie?
I vote no. Thank you.
Cool.
All right, looks like it's...
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
How do you feel about presenting this?
Still up to the commission.
Wait a minute. Mr. Kellum was asking a question, please. Mr. Kell.
How do you feel about being able to present to the commission how this went tonight as a commissioner?
Well, Mr. Button will be presenting it to me again, but...
This is all predicated upon the fact that it takes 2 weeks from hand scrape. That's all it is, just that little simple thing. Just moving something from the end of this list to the front of the list to let everybody have hand scrape, and it would all be taken care of.
Well, I think it's been taken care of tonight. I mean, the commission regards the decisions of this committee very highly.
Well, that's
so,
good.
So,
glad to hear that.
And also Mr. Button's commission, but what the panel here tonight decides, I think they will take into recommendation. I can't guarantee that, but that's my opinion.
And for the record, I would present this as I presented it to you, and I would say that this is what my recommendation is, or I would explain the reasons why I recommended this to you, and then I would explain to the commission what the season was that we accomplished there or that we came up with tonight, and then let the commission make that decision after weighing both the discussion we had here tonight and the reasoning for me presenting this to them. So,
will you be able to orate the fact that this is all predicated on the fact that there was no hand scrape for anybody in the James River the first 2 weeks of the month in October? Will you be able to orate that as well?
Yes.
Mr. Kyle?
No, I mean, Wayne, you
is this coming up this meeting?
You can speak. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
When is that? Tuesday? Next month?
All right, so it's all about
the third Tuesday in the month or
and
something.
This seems to be where the whole conservation issue is. There was no discussion about Area 8 and everything. It seems to be with the Pocomoke Town and everywhere else not having the 2 weeks here. So why don't you change option two? Give the Patentongers Area 8 if that's what you really need for the conservation equivalency. Because there's been no discussion about
that
whatsoever.
They've got it. On option two, they got it in month of October.
So why are we...
And that's where he said you were losing conservation
close
to
hand-grape. I mean, are you satisfied?
If that's the problem with number two...
I'm satisfied with this.
I mean, I'm fine with this.
Conservation close to equal, there's no problem whatsoever.
Just gives us somebody to work.
Well, I always say, I mean, if you get on them, let me help you on it.
All the discussion on number two would be perfect, and the conservation close to there would be no over harvesting, there would be no beyond your numbers that we're supposed to harvest, it would all be
the same. Put it
in the number two, I'll tell you.
Yeah, I'll put that up there.
Because, I mean, all this stuff is always about conservation fluencies, and there's the problem right there. So just give the patent talkers Area 8, that's what really must happen. And, I mean, if they can't do nothing in Area 8, next time it comes around, it'll be a hand scrape area. And there'll be more orchards there than we can harvest all winter. I mean, if that's really where the problem is, I mean, that would solve everybody's problems that everybody passes.
I would fully support that version, actually, as a unanimous
I ain't got a problem with
task.
It.
And
no problem with it. That would appease the watermen and the DMRC. And that's really what we need is both sides to agree.
Well, is there any problem with that, amending that to do that? If that's...
You would move the hand scrape to the first part of the month, take out the patentongers, and
right.
Area 8 would stay patentong?
That's correct.
Yeah. And then you would support.
Change the Great Wicomico and Blackberry Hank to December and February. Change that to November and change that to Patton Pong. And you have your conservation equivalency. We all get 5 months to work. You don't have watermen fighting over who gets to go where and what gear type you get to use.
They're going
to
probably.
They don't even fight each other. They end up on the left.
They're going to probably want to take up Area 3 off for Patton Pong. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that could. Area 3 could. Go off patent-tonging. Area 8 would stay patent-tonging through December.
Yeah, and that would get rid of the problem. People don't want patent-tongers in the scrape areas before we scrape.
And
yep.
I would make everybody happy. I could support that.
Okay. You need another motion?
I think we're going to have to redo this.
Wow.
Yeah, you would support that that way?
There would be no hand scraping Area 8.
So let's clarify this, and we will have to redo this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
You want me to take a stab at clarifying that?
Please.
So I think the proposal would keep everything as discussed in option two. The only change would be Area 8 would stay patent tongs from October through December. So Great Wicomico, this area would move to February, Blackberry Hangs to February, hand scrape in the Pocomoke Area 9 in November, Area 8, that would be where the major change was to the motion that was unanimously approved previously at this meeting.
And you're going to take off Area 3?
Area 3, that patent tong area there would get...
But there's going to be no hand scrape in December in the Rappahannock River.
There.
It would be.
Nope.
No, it wouldn't be.
No, it wouldn't. You took it away.
That's Rappahannock. Okay.
I think if we go to your original proposal and fix it there, it'd be a lot easier.
Okay.
Give you nothing in these
nice proposal.
We could.
Then it would be.
Yeah, but then you ain't gonna have it.
No.
You ain't gonna have it anything in February.
Yeah, well,
leave it like
that.
No, nothing will be open in February.
If you moved this here right to December, that would cover that one.
If you look at early
short data,
you gonna move Area 3 back to December in January?
That's the problem with when you start adjusting these, you get into a.
One to the upper, yeah.
Yeah,
I believe it like we had it.
Mr. Terrell,
yes, sir.
I don't know if we need a motion to reaffirm a motion, but I would say we stay with what was proposed. Yeah. And
was that proposed? Make a motion not to change a motion?
If that's a motion, I second it.
I think so. I think we're going to stay where we stand.
Okay. Good deal.
We stay with number two.
Yes, sir. We're at number two.
All right. Shall we move on?
All right, Lord have mercy.
That really is wraps it up in terms of the meeting, so I don't have anything else other than
I've got a question.
Yeah.
People in my area would like to see a 4-day week with a 10 bushel per man, simply because, which now we got November, December, and January. That might throw a hook into it, but before that, the boys from home had to come over here and either stay in a hotel or be like me, ride 265 miles a day.
Ooh.
And both of them are hard on your pocketbook with an 8-bushel limit.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. And I just didn't know how everybody felt about it. That way nobody will be losing anything except for you'd have 3 days off. I don't know how everybody feels about it or whatever, but...
You lose 2 days of... weather to or work to weather on a 4-day week for the industry.
Yeah, you're not going to lose any bad weather between now and the end of December.
Is that 4 days you pick or day four like Monday?
Like Monday, Tuesday, like it was last time. We got off Friday. You don't lose dredging. You don't lose. Well, me personally, I don't lose no time. I mean, you know, it just whether you're in the James River or the Pocomoke Sound or whatever. I mean, yeah. The last time we done it on the 4 days, I don't think anybody lost much time. I mean, we just lost a day. We didn't.
It was 8-bushel limit.
But that was the 8-bushel limit, you know. But still, everybody made it 4 days. It's just a thought. It would help the boys out at home. You want to second it, Mark?
Would that just be on hand scrape?
That would be fine.
You brought up a good point there that shifts pressure around on that other day to other areas if it's just hand scraping.
Oh, Mark. Mark, go home.
How does staff feel about something like that?
It could be a Marcia day off.
I think that given the season we had last year and the consistency of oysters coming in, I understand that 40 is 40 regardless, but I think that, you know, it does allow for weather to either hurt your harvest or you get to make it up, or whether as a conservation measure. So either way, I think it's best to leave it as it is.
All right, would you consider opening up Shell Rock in November, another year, instead of December and January?
In terms of moving that there, I think that it's probably better to not start doing stuff like that again, because most of these seasons that I put together carefully looked at the areas that are open, so the more you start shifting here and there, that shifts pressure around. So,
well, it puts pressure on us when we have to stay away from home and eat out.
Right.
In order to make a living when everybody else goes home.
Well,
so that's something to consider, too, in my opinion.
This proposed season, you'd asked for... Hand Scrape Area 9 to be open in November.
That's fine this year, but I'm talking about another year, November 1st for Shell Rock, Area 2 in Shell Rock.
Well, I mean, we can have that discussion another year.
Well, I just wanted to bring it by you now, because I'll be here next year if I'm living.
The only other thing I'd ask you to discuss maybe was the two areas I asked you to open in your comic book.
Yeah, the seed area is there, so I go through this real quick. The Hantong area is in the Yukamako. We discussed some areas that would also be open there, and I don't think there would be any issue. There's, I'm not remembering the name of public ground off the top of my head there, but there are some additional Hantong areas that we could open up in Yukamako there that I could add to this. And the areas that would open up in the Cone River this year would be the areas that we planted with seed this last year.
Those will remain closed until
those will remain closed until we had a chance to look at those. And the other Hantong areas would stay pretty much on.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Would you like to see that added to proposal 2?
I would. Yes, I'd like to see
a couple of the areas open in the Okamaka. Since we've closed a couple areas in the cone, I think we could open up. There's not much there, but if the guys in Yokomica can go catch 3 bushels a day, they only have $10 to $15 expense a week, you know. So
I would move to that effect.
Second.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Oh, I can't hear on the phone. She was opposed. Four.
Hand call.
Right, so that motion carries. And anything else we need to discuss tonight?
There were a couple letters that did come in about some other changes. I can go ahead and pass those out to you guys. A lot of it wasn't on the agenda tonight, so I was going to work it in if we could, but we're already pretty late here. But one was from Mr. Farrington. I can summarize it. And he had asked that SMAC address some of the issues with 40 days and transferring of licenses in terms of currently the regulation is written that you have to have 40 days the previous calendar year in order to transfer that license. And he'd ask that SMAC look into once you have 40 days, regardless of what year it is, being able to transfer that license so that mates on boats could move around. And then Mr. Odell Bell had asked that the hand scrape season be not open in October and move to the month of March when there was less for watermen to do, and that sort of summarizes those.
That other gentleman can answer up.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Button. I guess we need a motion to adjourn. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you all. I think we're going to make it.